right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our second session of the Mary Hyken Dumont University here at ASBE. It was very nice that the last week happened to be Mary Dumont's yahrzeit, just last week when we had our session, and we remember her well, appreciate her children's generosity to this program. Oh. The program, the discussion this week is about yet another value and the cutting edge of that value. When we talk about very basic values, we often assume that, well, that's what it is. A value like kindness that we're going to talk about this week. What can you say about kindness? What is the cutting edge of kindness? How could there be? Hi, how are you? Marty might want to bring out some of the chairs from the other room. Thank you. They're right there. What about kindness would be the cutting edge? How could you have too much kindness? Is there ever too much kindness? So what I'd like to do is, first of all, I'd like to... All right, we'll see. We'll see if we can get that. When it conflicts with integrity, what do you mean? Yes, good. Good. Could you lie, cheat, or steal in order to be kind to someone else? Right. Right. Very good. So, Ronald gave an example where there would be a cutting edge, or where too much kindness is no good. If you lied, cheated, or stole in order to be kind, so that would be an example of when there's too much kindness. So, firstly, let's establish the primacy of the value of kindness in Jewish thinking, and then only then we can begin to look at the cutting edge of it. So firstly, we have, of course, one of the most famous Mishnayos, famous passages, thank you, Marty, which Rabbi Shimon HaTzadik says the following, right? Who'd like to read that for us? On three pillars. Good.
On three pillars, the world stands on Torah, on avodah, worship, and acts of kindness.
So, Gemilut Chasadim, the giving, bestowing of kindness, is clearly one of the three pillars of the world. It's not the only pillar, as Ronald mentioned, right? It could come in conflict with a Torah, worship, somehow could come in conflict with kindness, right? Should you spend, right? If you're studying Torah, should you stop in the middle to go out and watch a funeral processional that's going on outside? And the answer is yes. So that it's not the only pillar, but one of the three major pillars. Also, the Gemara in Sota, Rabbi Simlai. Steve, would you read that for us?
Rabbi Simlai expounded, "The Torah begins with acts of loving kindness and ends with acts of loving kindness. It begins with acts of loving kindness as it is written, 'And the Lord made for Adam and his wife coats of skin and clothed them.' And it ends with acts of loving kindness, for it is written, 'And he buried him in the valley.'"
Beautiful exposition, the notion, beautiful drasha, the notion that the Torah is all kindness, it's all about kindness. There's kindness at the beginning when Adam and Eve were given clothing. There's kindness at the end when Moses is buried by God himself. So kindness is all over the place. And that, why do we read on Shavuos, why do we read the book of Ruth? Because it's all about kindness. And the Torah is all about kindness. Shavuos is the holiday. We got the Torah, which is all about kindness. So here is a statement that not only is it one of the three pillars, but the Torah is bookended with the notion of kindness, perhaps suggesting that the whole thing is all about kindness. And to go a step further, I'm going to say something that's perhaps a bit politically incorrect, but let's not get it wrong. The next statement is about the nature of a Jew. The nature of a non-Jew could be all types of non-Jews, but we make a basic statement about what a Jew must be in the Rambam, in the next laws. Rana, would you read that for us? Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah, you told me that last week. Sorry. What would you read for us? Thank you. Thank you.
"Everyone who is merciful evokes mercy from others, as Deuteronomy 13:18 states, 'And he shall grant you mercy and shall have mercy upon you and multiply you.'"
Yeah, so maybe other people will be kind to you. God will be kind to you if you show mercy and kindness to others. But go ahead.
"Whenever a person is cruel and does not show mercy, whose lineage is suspect. For cruelty is found only among the Gentiles.
Again, it doesn't mean that every Gentile, God forbid, is cruel. No way. But it means that if there's any cruelty, it can't be Jewish. You can't be Jewish. Go ahead.
As Jeremiah 3:42 states, they are cruel and will not show mercy.
Referring to the Gentiles, they could show cruelty. We cannot. So he even says that if someone was really the definition of cruel, then you have to wonder: is this guy Jewish? He can't be Jewish. If he's Jewish, there's no way he could be so cruel. Take it, you can leave it. But the point is, this is an assertion that we're making, that's what a Jew should be. In other words, they're saying the whole Torah is kindness, and it's definitional for a Jew. There's no way someone can claim Jewish heritage, be part of the Jewish people, and he has cruelty. You wonder, is this a child of Abraham? Sarah? Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't fit.
Right.
Yes?
The paragraph's uncanny. Very uncanny. In fact, it's abominable.
Well, the premise of this class is that the Torah is true and that the Talmud is true and not abominable. But you're welcome to challenge it. Go ahead.
Well, I definitely think that the Torah may not be abominable, but there are abominable things in it.
The Torah cannot have abominable things because it's from God. But the Talmud can have things that are problematic because a Talmud is a potpourri of all kinds of different things. Here, again, I think it's a gross misreading of this to say that it's saying, making any statement about Gentiles. It's not. Maimonides could make a mistake, but here he says, firstly, maybe referring to idolaters. So that's always a question. And also, he says as follows, cruelty can only be found among idolaters. So in other words, if you find cruelty, it would be among idolaters. He does not say all idolaters are cruel. He says no Jew can be cruel. That's what the paragraph is. It's circular. If you find a Jew is cruel, he says check his lineage. There's something wrong with him.
Is cruel? It's,
wait, are you telling me if I walk in this building and find me 50 Jews that are cruel that they're not Jews?
Well, we have to define cruelty. The point is, we are not here to... our class is not about this passage per se. Our class is about what Jewish thinkers assert about Judaism. Okay. Even if you claim that it's absolutely false, the assertion here is revelatory about the Rambam's notion of what a Jew is. A Jew, by definition, is someone who's not cruel. There, in the Talmud, they have stories of people who pointed fingers at other families. They said, this family is not good, they're not kosher. So they said, if anybody points fingers, let's check out his lineage. And it turns out that he's no... So there's the idea that when you point fingers.
But is the Rambam equating cruelty and not showing mercy? Or is he listing those as two different things?
Right, let's take a look in the Hebrew.
It's cruel.
Good question.
Not showing mercy.
Yeah, he starts off with two things, but then he says... Right, he doesn't say that anyone who doesn't show mercy can't be Jewish. Right. But in any event... We're most interested in the assertion that is so fundamental to Judaism that you got to wonder. Yes?
There are examples of cruelty in the Torah. For example, I just quickly could think of maybe Lot. There were Jews in Sodom who were cruel to other people. There were Jews who were cruelty in the Torah. I'm sure you can find examples of that. Mm-hmm. So I was with this up until it said, for cruelty is found only among the Gentiles, because I do think lineage can be suspect. Mm-hmm. If you see someone who practices cruelty, I would think that maybe they learned it somewhere, that it's a part of the nature that's mm-hmm. passed down, mm-hmm. but not necessarily from a Gentile. It could be passed down from a cruel Jew.
Right, we're saying, we're saying, definitionally, a Jew is a child of Abraham. Children of Abraham were not cruel. You know what it's maybe like when the teacher says, we don't do that in here. Well, he just did. The kid did it. He just did it. He's saying, in the Jewish circle, we don't do that.
But my point is not as to the issue, it's saying it. He is unkind in what he has just said, even if it's true.
There are unkind people in the world, true?
Maimonides?
Are there unkind people in the world?
All over the place.
So he's saying that I assert as a truism that none of them are that none of them are Jewish, and anyone who is, he's not Jewish. It's not unkind because we know they're uncruel people. So, but in any event, we must continue. We must continue. But the point is right. The statement is deeply politically incorrect. But the value that's stated, even if it has its own problems, the value that's stated is that we don't tolerate these type of things around these parts. So we continue with our next source. Having asserted that Torah is all about kindness, and that a Jew is all about kindness, and that it's a pillar of the world, we can then turn to the question, and we're still on the first page, but the translation's on the second page, that's true. We can now turn to the cutting edge and ask ourselves, when is kindness too much? When do we have to say no, not kindness? This too will be shocking to you. That's what this class is about, as a shock value. The cutting edge, and that is Rabbi Elijah of Vilna, Eliyahu Mivilna, the Vilna Gaon, lived about 300 years ago, and he makes a very strange assertion, and let's take a look at it, and surely there'll be some more good repartee about that too. So let's take a look. There's one typo here you'll forgive. Lenny, would you read that for us?
Completeness is only known if you have both of these characteristics.
I'm sorry, this is a citation from someone else. Both cruelty and kindness. Now we're asserting something else. And it doesn't work out well with the Rambam we said before. You have to have both characteristics in order to be a whole human being. Have to have some element of cruelty and some element of kindness. And maybe cruelty may be extreme.
Yes. Yes. And I think you could put the setting and the stage of what was going on in history, in world history, when he was alive, and what was going on.
But we have to move on. We have to move on.
To find out what made him say that, well, I think it would be very.
We have to move on. Well, he lived in the time of the great conqueror, the great conqueror in the great conqueror, the great Muslim conqueror. Let's continue.
The Vilna Gaon assumes that sending away the mother is very cruel.
Right? Most people say that the sending away the mother bird teaches us kindness, that the poor mother bird is going to be sad, so we send her away so she shouldn't see that we take her babies. When she comes back, she'll be sad, but you shouldn't be part of that. He says, no, it's a mitzvah to be cruel.
He points out that in only two commandments does the Torah promise long life. One is respect for parents, which is about compassion. The other is sending away the mother bird, which is about cruelty. The complete personality that is exotic needs to have both. Okay. As the Gaon explains, if someone has only one of these characteristics, you could say that this was just his nature. However, when you see the same person, the opposite characteristics of compassion and cruelty applied at different times, this shows that a person is exotic. This also explains why God gave commandments that are characterized by compassion as well as commandments that cause one to act with cruelty.
Right. So this is not my translation, but the Hebrew is there for you. Now, so he's claiming that some mitzvahs are there to train us to be cruel. Now, I'll tell you the way he says it and the way I like to say this over. The way he says, his emphasis is that if, let's say you say to Abraham, who we all assume is a very kind person, you say to him, you know, I'd like you to have a lot of guests in your house. He says, oh, great, I'm all about that. And he has guests and he's having a great time. Then you tell him, I want you to slaughter your son. So he says, whoa, wait a second, that's not my kind of thing, I'm out. So, but when you say that his whole life he was doing acts of kindness, he saved his nephew, he fought a whole war to save his nephew from captivity, he had guests, that was in sync with his personality. But then, when he was asked to offer his son, which in the end he didn't have to do, but when he was asked to do that, that was an act of cruelty. So he should have said, I can't do that. Now, whether he should have said that or he could have said it, but in the end, he was willing to do whatever God asked, even if it was an act of cruelty, showing that he's not just following God because it's in sync with his personality. He's a religious type. He has that gene. But rather, whatever God says, he'll do. So he was willing to moderate his kindness, which is what he's definitely all about, with another characteristic which we wasn't all about. And that's why in the Ari, in Kabbalistic writings, there's an idea that when Abraham and Isaac walked together, you know, that he asked him, "Hey, Dad, where's the sheep for the offering?" He says, "Sheep is coming later." You know, and they keep walking together. It's two characteristics walking together. The characteristic of Isaac, who's more severe. He's awesome. He's willing to sacrifice himself. With Abraham, who's all about kindness, and they walk together. It's the combination. It's the melding of two values. And the Gra says that's ideal to weld the two values. The way I like to say this, Vilna Gaon, is like this. Most of the Torah, as we said from the Gemara and Sota, the Talmud and Sota, is about kindness. Comes the Vilna Gaon and says, you've got to have a few mitzvot in there about cruelty. And here's my commentary. If you don't have any mitzvot about cruelty, then the Jewish people would never last for 5 minutes. The Jewish people have to be able at times when it's called for, hopefully not when it's not called for, we'll see that later, to engage in acts of cruelty. Otherwise, the people who are just all about liberal values and can't even lift a gun, they won't survive. And there are plenty of other people who are happy to shoot them down. So we see this today, perhaps, in a lot of circumstances. So we could go on and on about the modern circumstances, but let's continue.
It's a different word than cruelty, like, you know, gevura is really, like, here I see it's translated heroism, it's strength, like, you know, like tough love
we're talking about. Right.
When you, overflowing.
I agree with you. When the Ari is talking about the two characteristics which Abraham and Isaac shared, it's not necessarily cruelty, although, don't forget, we're talking about the binding of Isaac, which was infanticide or something. So it's killing your own child. But in the Vilna Gaon, the word is achsariyut. Yeah. He does use that. And it's a good question. How could he claim that you're supposed to have achsariyut? The Rambam just said that a Jew doesn't have it. I don't know. But no, the Ari was lived 500 years ago in Sfat, the great founder of a school of mysticism. Nusach Ari is the siddur that he used. Our congregation, Nusach Sfarad, we use more or less the type of siddur that he would have used because we're from the Hasidim, from the mystics. He didn't. Okay, moving along. Now, for instance, if you look in the Torah of someone who had no brutal bone in his body, was Aaron. And actually, Hillel tells us we should all be like Aaron. But what happened to Aaron when he was in charge of the Jewish people? For 5 minutes, right? They walked all over him, and everyone was worshiping idols, and who knows what else they were doing, right? Right. So, right. So on the one hand, we aspire to be like Aaron, and Hillel says, you know, leave Moses for someone else. Don't try to be Moses. You know, be like Aaron. Be a student of Aaron. It's a good thing to be. You know, if your children are too kind, nobody would complain. But the truth is, the Vilna Gaon is saying, as a whole, can you really do that? Can you just be kind? So here's a bit of the cutting edge. Now, the next point, I emailed two philosophical friends I have who I thought would help me out. I thought that I saw this quoted from Kierkegaard or someone from the modern German philosophical schools who said the idea that love diminishes as it's expanded. Meaning, if I say I love my wife, that's great. If I say I love my wife and kids, okay, that's fine. If I say I love, you know, everybody here equally with my family, and then if I say I love the whole world, at a certain point, none of the love means anything. Now, one philosophical friend of mine said, I thought we think the opposite. I said, what's the source of this? He says, what do you mean the source of this? I think the opposite. The more love you have, the better. The other fellow said he recently read it in Amos Oz. Shalom Karmi said, recently read this kind of idea in Amos. Here's one Amos Oz, a modern writer in Israel, one of the great Hebrew writers today, Israeli writers.
The question of your ten fingers, which one do you love the most?
Amos Oz.
Go ahead.
Answer that. Which of your ten fingers do you love the most?
Well, we're going to get to that. You're saying that all of humanity is part of one hand?
Yes.
Okay, we're going to get to that point. On the other hand, right, is it ethical to love me as much as your wife?
The love
of me or some guy walking down the street as much as your own wife or children?
I would say that there are probably different kinds of love.
Ah, okay. All right, so then you're just changing the definition. Just changing the definition. But
it's not the same.
Right, so then we're talking different definition. But so let's hear this argument.
Well, let me throw that back at you then. Do you love Asher as much as you love your wife?
Right. Good point. Love in different ways, but the but it's immense. It's immense. It's comparing two infinities. Two infinities. It can't be compared. But there are other people that it would be inappropriate to shower that much love on them. Care, concern, ethical sharing, ethical standards, and ethical concerns is one thing. For instance, this country cannot show the same level of legal and ethical compassion for other people outside of our borders. You don't have to be Donald Trump, right? We do not have a pension plan for people from Mexico or from Canada or from Sweden or anything like that, right? There's no way that any of our children, if we can, are going to go without shoes. But there are people in the world who go without shoes. How do we sleep at night? So you might say we shouldn't, and if we gave $10 to Africa, we could give 20 pairs of shoes to all these people. And you might say that the role of human beings is to care first and foremost for their family, next for their community, next etc., and that our responsibility becomes more diffuse, and that's okay. But this is a big debate. This is a big debate. The universalists deeply disagree. One of the philosophers I emailed, he was offended by this notion. Here's an article from Azur. It's kind of a right-wing philosophical journal. You may be familiar. Some of the one of the writers became a ambassador to Israel, and it's a nice journal. But this was from a while ago, and so here's an attack on universal love in one particular paragraph. Who would like to read that for us? Julie, want to read that for us?
Sure. In short, universal love isn't love at all, because love means preference. The kind of love that means anything, the kind of love we all really want and need and live for, the kind of love that is worth anything to anyone, that is worth everything to everyone, is love that by its very nature, by its very definition, distinguishes and prefers. Show me a guy who tells you that he loves your kids as much as he loves his own, and I'll show you someone who should never and under no circumstances be your babysitter. Stay away from such people. Head for the hills. He who aspires to love everybody the same has no idea what love means, indeed is really advocating, and may be entirely unaware of this, the removal of all love worthy of the name from the planet Earth.
I realize there are other ways of looking at it. We can talk about it. But this is one argument. Ronald? What happened?
I find the whole thing to be rather a waste of time, if you know the truth.
What do you mean?
It's a non-issue.
Why?
Well,
right. Why is it an issue?
Of course. Well.
Walking around, baby.
Yes.
You're not caring about me, you know, a child. Like I said, you know, you care more about so-and-so. The relationships, spousal relationships, so many. Like, where do you give your time? Who do you care? How does it work?
Well, it definitely doesn't work this way. It's different in different circles.
Well, there are people. This is very non-PC. The general zeitgeist today is that we should care as much for the people in Rwanda, India. Your children are as likely this summer to help Ethiopian kids in Israel as they are to go to Guatemala. And it doesn't make a difference.
That's not a Jewish philosophy. Jewish philosophy is a little circle with a bigger circle. Okay. And a bigger circle with a bigger circle.
That's what we're here tonight, right? That's where you're tonight, and right. So that's the cutting edge of love. You would think that love should be to everybody, and the more love, the better. Like this philosophical friend I had, who said, "What are you talking about? The more love, the better." But this is another argument.
There are people who can do that.
That could be. They used to criticize Rav Kook. They said he loves too much. He was a universalist. Okay, now. But we will. You can find the other notion. We'll get to that soon. Now, then, there's when mercy becomes cruelty. You know the teacher who starts off and everything's okay. You know, you're throwing spitballs. It's all right. You know, you don't hand in your homework. It's fine. What happens by the end of the year? Nobody learns it. Not only that, right? In order to maintain the class, which is now totally out of control, they become the biggest tyrant you've ever seen in your life, right? Because you have to. Right. So there is an idea that sometimes when mercy can become cruelty. So the Rabbi Elazar in the Midrash, Tanchuma is one of the books of Midrash, says anyone who has mercy on the cruel, right? And you should be cruel to the cruel. But instead you had mercy on the cruel, in the end he becomes cruel to the merciful. And the example is Saul. So watch these, look at these two verses, they're actually parallel. You can see them on the next page. Ruth, would you read the two verses for us on page 3, top?
But Saul and the people spared Agag.
Agag was the head of Amalek. He was the head of Amalek, they spared him. Go ahead. Right, so we're not so interested here in the destroying of the sheep, but in terms of, although it does say he had mercy on the sheep, but he spared Agag, he spared the head of Amalek, the head of the wicked terrorist group, he spared him at the beginning of his career. He was told, destroy Amalek. He destroyed some of them, refused to destroy the leader, maybe it was a professional courtesy, and then he also didn't destroy the sheep. But later, he went a little bit berserk, and there was a town called Nob, and he thought that they were siding with David against him. He thought they were traitors. And therefore, he took this city of priests and also of Gibeonites, of converts. And what happened? Continue, Ruth.
And Nob, the city of the priests, smote thee with the edge of the sword, both men and women and children, and suckling and oxen, and asses and sheep with the edge of the sword.
So, in the end, Shaul started being this person who people insulted him. He said, "It's okay. I'm just a humble king. Don't worry about it." And then he was supposed to fight Amalek, so he didn't destroy the head of Amalek. And then, by the end of his career, he was wiping out men, women, and children who were Jewish, who were part of his country that he was supposed to take care of, because he went berserk. So sometimes having mercy on the wrong people, it means your whole moral compass is off. And if it's off, who knows where it goes? Yes, I'm sorry.
The
conversation was that you should listen. Yeah, he said, I sit. Yeah, right. They didn't talk as much about Amalek, as I recall. They were talking about the sheep. He says, "Oh, I saved the sheep so I could bring sacrifices." He says, "Listening to God is the best sacrifice that I did." But yes, it was addressed. Now, here's a case where several times in the Torah says, "Do not have mercy." This is one of these cases we should not have mercy. I think we all, there are some that you could quibble about. This one I think we can all agree on, more or less. I mean, question of death penalty, not death penalty, but certainly not to have mercy on a murderer, to some degree, we could all agree. Verse 11, who'd like to read that for us? Marcy, would you read for us?
Sure. "But if any man hate his neighbor, and lie in wait for him, and rise up against him, and smite him morally, then he die. Into one of these cities."
They used to have if you smote someone by accident, then you go to the city of refuge. Go ahead.
This is...
Right, but you get to go to the city first before you are judged. In other words, someone killed someone. So then, who shot the man who shot Kennedy? You know. So someone might shoot him. So he said, "Well, go to the city of refuge, and then you'll be judged from there, and then we'll decide if you should be killed." Go ahead.
"Then the elders of the city shall send and fetch him thence, and deliver him into the hands of avenger of blood, that he may die."
It doesn't exactly work that way, but we're not here to discuss it. Continue.
"Thine eyes shall not pity him, but thou shalt put away the blood of innocence from Israel, that it may go well with..."
So something to the effect that if someone murdered somebody and you had a court, the court convicted him, then you should not have mercy on on that person. So there is a time when having mercy is actually a prohibition. Thou shalt not have mercy. The Ramban says very pithily that in a pithy kind of way, that what? Mercy on the murderers is spilling blood. Or, as I mentioned a little bit above here, you know, if you know the story of David and Absalom, they said, you know, David, Absalom, you know, killed somebody, but, you know, it's your son, and you feel bad for him. And after a while, he brought Absalom back into the city, and he rebelled and kicked David out of the throne, made an entire rebellion, and in the end, he had to have a whole army to destroy Absalom because he had mercy on his son, who was a murderer. It's a good question.
They had to have, like, the two witnesses. It had to be very certain that this person
right.
kind of did it. So I'm just curious how that fits.
There's a mandate to save. You should be like, the judges should be like lawyers and try to save the person. It's a mandate to try to save. Maybe different from having mercy. Mercy means that if he killed him, I'm not going to kill him. Saving means, as we listen to the case, we say, really? Do we really have a full case? Can we really prove this? And the evidentiary level was raised to such a high level that it was often hard to convict someone of murder. That's true. But it's not out of mercy, as a type of hesitancy about justice. They said once every 70 years, which might be a euphemism for never commit. Yeah, yeah. So it could be more of a hesitancy to use the death penalty. It's a great question, because on the one hand we're saying, when you need to do the death penalty, do it. Don't have mercy. On the other hand, but really, can we trust our justice system? You know, like, people are raising questions in this country, which has a wonderful system. Say, really, how come all the people who are, you know, most of the people who are dying are of a particular race? What's going on? Huh? You wonder.
Exonerated who were on death row.
Right. Right. Well, the levels of evidence required in America are not very high, so compared to the Jewish ones. You could have a wrongful conviction.
I mean, if we really went along with what the Rambam said on the first page, mm-hmm. we wouldn't even need courts or anything, because there would be no judgment. It's just have mercy on everybody, and they go free.
Right.
And so it seems to me that cruelty and mercy being two poles, but there are places in between. Judgment comes somewhere in between. You have to use your judgment,
that's a judgment
to decide how much of the cruelty to apply and how much of the mercy to apply. Mm-hmm. And that's where the legal system comes in.
Yes.
But also when we say that Hashem has mercy and judgment.
Right.
And not all one and not all the other. We never say that he's cruel.
Right. That's, in general, we try to emulate God's mercy. It never says anywhere we should emulate God's judgment, ruthlessness at times, right? Because we can handle being merciful like God. So, you know, we can try, but we probably can't handle being vengeful and all that. So like God, so we're not even supposed to emulate that. But yes, God has both. And the role of the court in a capital case is that half the judges, you have a certain number. So I think it's 11 are there to, the 10 are there, 1 minion is there to save him, 1 minion is there to convict him, and then the other, the few people in the middle have to decide whether they go this way or that way. But if, we have this view that if everyone agreed that he was guilty, then he's innocent. It was recently, Bloom circulated an article recently where a judge in, someone was invoking this notion that you have complete unanimity, you wonder whether he had a fair trial.
But I thought that in our court system in America, mm-hmm. that to convict someone of murder, you have to have unanimity.
Right, it's very different.
You can't even have one person.
Right, it's very different. It's the same thing. The question is, probably in the court, in the jury room, I assume you have different views, and then they just force everyone to agree to the same thing, as opposed to our system, which in the end you can have a dissenting opinion even about a conviction. But in any event, now there's something a bit deeper as we move on to the conclusion of our class. And that's the famous question, which here we're going to look at in this particular context. We may have seen it in other contexts, but now we're going to look at it from this context. The question is, should you risk your life for another person? So we can talk about it. We can have a whole separate class on that. We're not. We're looking at it in terms of, does that show you have a certain limitation on kindness? In other words, if we would say that in circumstance X, Y, or Z, you shouldn't risk yourself, your life, for someone else, that would be a limitation of kindness. It might be, maybe not. But if there's ever a circumstance where your mother would say, no, I know you want to save the whole world, but in that circumstance, you can't go. There's malaria over there. You can't do it. You can't go there. So that would be a limitation of kindness. Is it okay? Is it not okay? Should you risk your life to save someone else? If we want to be absolutely kind, of course, you should always risk your life for anything, for everything, no matter what. You should always risk your life for others because we're all about kindness.
Right? Then your life has no value.
Ah, very good. What about your life?
Who's going to go, right? Hashem decides who lives and who doesn't live.
We have to take reasonable actions that would not likely lead to our death. Right.
But you get a medal if you fall on a grenade and protect the guests of the
Adventist. Right, in a war, right, that's interesting. In a war, they don't seem, right. In a war, it could be different, yeah. But I'm sorry, Esteline, and then, yes.
No, without borders, does. They risk their lives to save other people.
But they bring penicillin and they bring right. They bring anti-malarials. They bring nets. Right. Right. The question is right. At what level? At what level is it foolhardy and even forbidden because you're risking your own life because you're playing with your own life? And at what level is it kind? Right. So then now we're getting to the cutting edge. Okay. Did you? Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say that kind of takes us back to the question of. Loving everybody the same? Because you're more likely to risk your life for your spouse or your children or your sibling or parents than you are risk your life for just anybody.
That's why we put people in the army usually to defend their country. It's kind of tragic when somebody from France or who knows where is on the border with Lebanon and Hezbollah shoots them down and they die defending somebody else's country for the U.N.
Young man from Tennessee who was that sergeant during World War II. Did you read about that? Where the Nazi prisoner camp, and the Nazi leader said,
right.
"Say all the Jews come forward." And 1,000 people reported that. And the captain or sergeant, he said, "Are they all Jews?" The Nazi says, "Well, you know what? We don't ask that question. We're not." And the guy had a gun to his head. He said, "I'm going to kill you if you don't tell me." He said, "Well, you know, if you do, then you will be prosecuted in war. We're not required to say who is a Jew or who is a Jew."
Right. So his great hair was
a hero. So the Nazi ran away in rage.
Right, although he...
There were only 200 Jews, but none of them...
Now, that's a complex case because he was saving many lives as he was risking many lives.
He risked his own. He was going to kill him.
He was risking his life, which is very complicated because do we have a right to do that? He was risking the lives of some of his other non-Jewish compatriots, and he was trying to save a whole bunch of Jewish people. I assume it wasn't that many, but a bunch of Jewish people who were in his regiment. So, complicated and interesting. Is it different because it's in war? In times of war, you know, we have the famous Roe Klein, who threw himself on a grenade so it wouldn't blow up in front of everyone else. Only he would die. That's considered a hero, not foolhardy. When is it? So we're going to look at four cases. Yes?
That doesn't necessarily mean
right, just because someone could be lionized as a great hero, even though they did the wrong thing. That's correct.
Because I mean, with the water test, you know, water enough for you and me. Do I give you the water? Mm-hmm.
Right, we're going to get that. Right. So, we'll get to that one thing. Right. So let's take a look at the famous some of these famous Gemaras, which will tell us about this. So let's look at the Gemara above Matzias 62a. Who would like to read that for us, Tana? No, okay. How about Marty?
Which one?
Rabbi Yochanan.
Rabbi Yochanan, what does he do with, and your brother should live with you?
So they were talking about some other topic, and they wondered, what does he do with this verse? Your brother should live with you. You should live, and your brother should live at the same time. Go ahead.
He needs it for that which we learned in
right.
Micah, outside the source. Two who walked in the way, and in the hand of one is a jug of water. If they both drink, they both die. And if one drinks, he gets back to civilization.
Right, there's one thing of water. If we both drink it, we're never going to, both of us will die. If, God forbid, if just the person who has the water drinks it, he could probably make it to the end. Go ahead.
Then Datura proclaimed, better they should both die and one should not see his friend die.
Some suggest that Batur is not a famous person. We don't know who he is. Some suggest it might be Jesus. But because that seems to be in consonance with some things he said in the Christian Testament. Continue.
Until Rabbi Akiva came and taught, your brother should live with you. Your life comes before your friend's life.
So here's a major principle based on this verse that your brother should live with you, meaning with you. If I'm not here, right, my brother's welcome to come and stay at my house, but only if I'm here. If I'm not here, he can't come. So if I'm dead, I'm not going to worry about him. I have to be alive first. Then he can live with me. I'm going to help him live with me. But if I have to be dead first, no way. My life comes first. Now, how to understand this is a matter of dispute. But if in terms of what we're talking about today, limitations of kindness, is that a limitation of kindness to say that your life comes before your neighbor's life? So, was it okay who said that it may be a limitation of kindness toward the other, but it is kindness toward yourself, right? Right? If kindness is an important value, you can't be cruel to yourself either. But maybe not. Maybe you're supposed to be a hero. Let's take a look at Rabbi Bachrach. He says, is it known that he would die if he shares? Okay, is it known that he would die if he shares? In this case, the way the case is set up, is it known? Yes. So Rabbi says yes. If it sounds like it must, they're definitely going to die. So Rabbi Akiva is saying that even though, that if you're definitely going to die, then you can't do it. But if it was a case where, you know, we'll both drink, and I don't know if you can make it back to the JCC in time if you both drink it. I don't know. I'm not sure. Then, what would Rabbi Akiva say? You should share it. So apparently, can you put yourself at risk to some sort of doubt in order to spare your friend? Yes. However, the Netziv, Rabbi Pearl's favorite rabbi, he said, wait a second. What kind of craziness? Ben Patur said that you should both die? That makes any sense, right? That you know that you're both going to die. So you're definitely going to die. So he said, that's the solution. We should both die. Let's you drink. You have at it. I'll have some. And we'll both die. What kind of thing is this? He says, so it must be, right? That must be wrong, right? It must not know. It must be that probably they were going to die. There was some hope, however, they wouldn't die. They'll both drink, and you know, they might both die, but there's some hope. So I'm going to risk my life to share. And what does Rabbi Akiva say? You can't risk your life to share. So according to the Rabbi Bachrach, the Chabos Yair, you should risk your life to, if it's only a risk, Rabbi Akiva would allow it. But according to the Netziv, according to Rabbi Akiva, you shouldn't risk your life for others. Yes?
Where's Hashem in all this?
Sorry?
I mean, where's Hashem in all this? I mean, like, look at Abraham's, the second wife.
Right, Hagar, Yishmael.
He's crying out to Hashem. Why can't? But where's, I mean, I don't understand.
No, we can't act that way. In other words, it's true that in this story, God could emerge and all of a sudden a well appears. Like the story of Baal Shem Tov, he was so sad he couldn't wash his hands before Mincha. He wanted to wash his hands. So he fell on his face and he was screaming and all of a sudden they saw a well. So that could, if you're the Baal Shem Tov, that could happen. But that's up to Hashem. My job is to figure out ethically, what should I do? Should I save my life or should I try to save his life? That's the question. You should also daven, but that the ethical plane does not function on that plane. It's two different planes. You have to hope and pray, and you also have to be responsible right now for the rational. You have to act rationally right now. Yeah.
I didn't get what the answer was.
Which one? According to the Rabbeinu Ba...
Are you supposed to split the water, or are you supposed to give it to one person?
We agree with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva usually wins the arguments. So whatever he said goes.
Yeah.
Rabbi Bachrach thinks that by implication, he's saying that if it's a doubtful, if it's doubtful they'll both die, you should risk your life. The Netziv thinks that he's saying that he, that, that Ben Baturah said that.
No, but if, who's the Netzach?
He was Rabbi Berlin. His son was in the Knesset. He lived 100 years ago, 100, over 100 years ago. It's a debate. It's a debate. That's all.
Okay.
It's a debate.
Is there a conclusion?
There's a debate about it. Yes. The general. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that later. We'll get to that later. Okay. Next. Moving along. Now. But also, we had two explanations. We were looking at it. We were saying, well, maybe there's a limitation on kindness. You should always save other people, but not when, not at a point where it's going to save my life. That's going too far. If it's going to kill me, then I don't go that far. However, Reb Chaim says, that's for Rabbi Salvation's grandfather, he says, nothing to do with that. The prohibition of murder is more stringent than the mitzvah to save a life. I'd be murdering myself if I don't drink this. So that's more important. There's another mitzvah to save a life. I can't. I don't have the luxury of saving his life. I'd be murdering myself. That's his way of looking. It has nothing to do with being kind or not being kind. Rashi says, saving a life is not obligatory when it involves another's death. Right? I can't say that I have a mitzvah to save him. It doesn't apply when saving him kills me. It doesn't apply. So according to these analyzers, it really has nothing to do with kindness. But
we're analyzing something.
Yes. No. In extreme cases, yes. In cases of war and things like yeah. No. The question of your kidney. Should you give your kidney? Right. There's a small risk if you give your kidney. There's a small risk that it'll get infected, or you might lose your other one, or get in a car accident, and you lose the other kidney, you only have one left, and then you don't have any kidneys, and they have to go on dialysis, and now you live 30 years less, because, right? So there's this small chance. Most chances are, you heal, it hurts, you recuperate, you have one kidney, you live the rest of your life with one kidney, right? But
the final analysis is, mm-hmm. If by giving up your kidney, you're definitely going to die, you cannot give up your kidney.
Right. Ah, so that's the other. We'll get to the obligation one second. Let's get to that. We need the next passage in order to appreciate that. Rav Imi, who'd like to read that? Rav Imi, Mel, want to read that about Rav Imi? Page 4 at the top, second line. Rav Imi?
Rav Imi, when you conducted
an
from Yonatan's
sale,
let the dead be prepared in his shroud.
Look, Rabbi Ami is a big guy. It might be Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Imi. He's a big rabbi, but, you know, anybody got any shrouds? You know what's Canali's phone number, right? So he's not taking any action. Go ahead. In other words, forget about it. He's saying forget about it. The rabbi was captured. That's very nice. Have a nice day. Right. Go ahead.
Right. I will go to save him with force. He went and negotiated, and they gave him to him.
Right. So, interesting, a little biographical note, Rav Shimon ben Lakish, he may have had a brief period in his life when he was a gangster. So, it's interesting that he took this this view. And he was ready to take up his arms again. And but in the end, he was able to negotiate. He didn't even have to use his arms. But he was willing to take up arms for it. After all, where the army always goes into the army. When it comes to the army, we can't say somebody might die. We better not have an invasion. Somebody might die. You're supposed to conquer Israel. You're supposed to save the Jews. You're supposed to protect the cities from barrages of rockets. So the army is different. But in any event, was Reish Lakish is a more famous rabbi than Rabbi Yonatan? So presumably, he's the law, unless there's a printer's error and the other rabbi is Rabbi Yochanan, in which case he wins. But assuming, what is Reish Lakish? Is Reish Lakish willing to take a risk for his life to save someone else? Yeah. Absolutely. A large risk? Yeah. Right. Yeah, he is. So that would seem to indicate that. However, we might argue that he didn't say, guys, you must go risk your lives. What did he say? I'm going to do it. In other words, this is a wonderful law for... For me, who else would be like him? A big tzaddik. If you're a big tzaddik and you want to do that, right? If you want to give your kidney, that's great. And we'll call you a tzaddik. We'll give you shlishi. You'll be the most honored person in the shul. Well, Mel has to decide that. But we'll be the most honored person in the shul. But I don't know if I want to do it. But if someone did it, that would be great. So that's one approach to the kidney. That it's like Reish Lakish. You're a great hero if you did it. But, yeah. Some people want to say if the doctor could show that the risk is that low, you know, then of course you have to also consider the health of the person you're giving it to. You're going to live for 2 years, and I'm going to be in risk for the rest of my life. Okay, but
in terms of sacrificing your own life for
yes.
someone else, that would be like if you've already given someone one of your kidneys and now you want to give someone else the other kidney. That's definitely going to mean your death, but it'll save someone else's life. Is that
well? There, at least there's an option. No, no. At least there was an option here that in one side of the story he was going to live. Right. It turns out there were three.
There's no option to live.
Right. You can't. Right. You can't. Right. So the
yacht is saying to do that.
Right, so the Kesef Mishnah, the world rabbi who later wrote the Code of Jewish Law, says, no question, it seems from here that you can definitely risk your life. However, the Yad Eliyahu of Lublin, 18th century, he says, wait a second, is this something, maybe just something nice that he did? It's a story, doesn't mean that's the law. Continuing, the Gemara Nida, who would like to read that for us? Who didn't have a chance? Debbie, did you read for us?
What?
Did you read? Why don't you read for us?
These Galileans?
Mm-hmm.
These Galileans about whom there was a rumor that they killed the soul.
They killed somebody. They killed somebody. Go ahead.
They came to Rabbi Parkhorn and they said to him, guard us, master.
In other words, take us in. We need, you know, they come to the rabbi, he has to take everybody in. Go ahead.
He said to them, what should I do?
You have to read it like Tevye. Go ahead. If
I don't hide you, the kingdom will find out.
Now you're talking about the Romans. Go ahead.
Guard you, but the rabbis say, lashon hara about you. Even though it is forbidden to accept it, but one does need to be concerned if it is correct. So go hide yourself.
He's saying, on the one hand, if I save you, then the Romans are going to get us, and they'll get all of us, and we'll all be dead. Right? He would never make it as a righteous Gentile. And then he says, but on the other hand, maybe I should take you in. So yeah, but they say that you guys are bad guys. You killed somebody. Maybe kill me, or maybe why should I save you? I don't know. Let the Romans take. So well, but I only heard that from Lashon Hara. You're not supposed to accept Lashon Hara. Yeah, but you shouldn't be foolish about it. If you heard some Lashon Hara, you already heard it. It might be true. So you have to take precautions. I'm going to take precautions. Have a nice day. So is he taking any risk?
No.
So this rabbi seems to take no risk. Oh, that's right. Final Gemara, right. Final Gemara, Sanhedrin 73A. Let's see. Nancy? Nancy? I'm sorry? No, go hide yourselves.
But maybe he said, go hide yourselves here. Go hide yourselves here.
Oh, no, not here. No. And we can go back and see. That's not how it's generally understood, but continue.
With his life.
It's unclear. It means that you, if someone's trying to kill him, then you could kill someone in order to save him. Go ahead.
The Torah teaches, do not stand idly by the blood of your neighbor. But this is needed for this. This is needed for that which is taught. How do we know that if you see your friend drowning in the river, or a wild beast dragging him, or a robber coming on him, that you have to save him? The Torah teaches, do not stand idly by the blood of your neighbor. It is indeed so.
Yeah, so anyway, the exact context there is not really our topic. But the here it seems to say that if someone's drowning in a river where a beast is dragging, you can save him. In other words, do you have to risk your life to save someone else?
No.
Oh, well, wait. You have to be qualified. You have to be qualified. Right. Now, Lisa's raising the question, if someone's having a heart attack, you have to save them. Not me. I don't know how to use a defibrillator. You got to get Joe to do it. You have to get somebody who knows what they're doing. Right? So that's true. The lifeguard should save him. Right. Should you save him if you can't swim? Right. But here it's an obligation. Here it's a simple myth. They opened last week's Parsha and they said, of course. Right? So of course you have to risk yourself. Now, the Talmud gives a case of a river. Rambam says a sea, which could be interpreted as an ocean. In other words, the Rambam is saying you have to even go into a more dangerous place. Rivers can be dangerous too, but so anyway, there might be a distinction there. But so the Radvaz says, look, it seems to be a dangerous situation, and it seems to be a mitzvah to save someone. So some people say like this. There's a case where greater than 50% chance that that if you try to save this guy, your life, God forbid, will be taken. So then, that would probably be a good time to apply one of the Gemaras here that says, like the Romans, if the Romans are coming, you better find someplace else. There's another case where it would be 50-50. It's 50-50. That might be a case where, if you're Reish Lakish, you can, if you want to be very pious, you can go save him. There's a case where there's less than 50% chance that something will happen to you, right? Lifeguards have been known to drown in the river when trying to save people. But it's your trained life, right? So there's less than 50%. If it's a less than 50% chance, then what? What is it? It may be an obligation, it may be a mitzvah. So that's a simple kind of a solution to the overall question. We also have to throw into factor in all kinds of other things. Like it says in the Torah, you should watch over yourselves very carefully. There's a notion to watch our bodies. We should take care of ourselves. It's a verse in Devarim, as my father often pointed out. It's one of the few mitzvahs that it says very much, right? It's a superlative that you have to watch yourself very carefully. Then there's another Talmudic concept, and we've got to finish in a second, that who says your blood is redder? Maybe someone else's blood is redder. In other words, you want to save your life by killing someone else. You say, oh, I have to save my life. I'll kill the other guy because I've got to save my life. You say, wait a second. Who says your blood is redder? Maybe his blood is redder. Does that mean your blood is redder than your friend? See, so far today, we've kind of been leaning in that direction. It sort of sounds like my life is more important than your life. But it could be, well, all we're saying is, I don't know. I can't take my life to save your life because I don't know that your life is worth more than my life. Nor can I take your life to save my life, right? I can't kill someone in order to save my life because who says his blood is redder than mine? You know, who says my blood is redder than his? So it's something we just don't know. So this is the cutting edge of kindness. If I don't know, whose life is more important, I can't take any action. As the Tosfot says, you just have to be passive about it. Don't give away your water. You have to be passive, right? Now, finally, let's just wrap up what we've been saying. I know there were a lot of loose ends, but let's see if we can just sum it up a bit. Number one, chesed is a supreme Jewish value, so much so that we have hyperbolic statements. We can argue about all night about how important kindness is. And again, on Shavuos, we're going to read a book of kindness, Ruth, because when the day we get the Torah, we should read a book about kindness.
But why, Rabbi? Why is kindness that high level in our religion when there are other things that to me are far more important?
What's more important than being good to other people? What?
Integrity.
That's next week's topic. Join us next week. Right. The one rabbi says that these are not the three pillars we read before. The three pillars are Emet, Din, V'Shalom. Peace is kind of what we're talking about tonight. And justice and truth, like the American way. So that's another view. Right. So, peace. So it's a good question. We'll talk about truth next week and the cutting edge of
truth.
Cutting edge of truth. Now, I've got to go to Mincha, so excuse me. I just want to finish up. So number one, we're going to stop. We're just going to summarize. 30 seconds. Number one, chesed is a supreme value. It is a defining value as a Jew. Perhaps there's also a time for cruelty, for perhaps that's too strong a word. Perhaps there's a time for something less than kindness, something a little stricter. Kindness sometimes itself can be cruel, and if applied in the wrong, ridiculous situations. Too much love, perhaps, it's arguable, but maybe too much love for everybody, it becomes too diffuse, it can devalue personal love. Maybe that's a cutting edge. Mercy on the cruel could sometimes lead to our own death, right? If we have mercy on ISIS, right? Guess whose head is in a roll, right? And then the question is, does your life come first? We haven't really proven that. Bottom line, it often does. But is that because your life is more important than others? Is it somehow a limitation on cruelty? Or is it because somehow the law at that point, you have no right to take your life? Is that the point? Is your life perhaps equal to others? And that's why you can't do anything. You can't give away your water. You can't take any action that would kill him, kill me. Or is it perhaps an example where there's a limit to kindness? If it means taking my life, that's the limit. Anyway, I hope we at least got you thinking about the limitations of kindness. And finally, one might summarize with Hillel on the last page that if I'm not for myself, who is? But if I'm only for myself, then what am I? Perhaps summarizes some of this discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.